When you look at a city skyline, you see steel, right? Steel, glass, and concrete.
Yeah, the heavy stuff.
Exactly, the heavy stuff. I mean, it is just about the most physical, tangible thing in the world.
For sure.
But today, we're looking at how that deeply physical world is colliding with something entirely invisible, which is digital code.
Right, which sounds like sci-fi, but it's happening right now.
It really is. So, Saudi Arabia is currently going through this historic multi-trillion-dollar real estate boom, but traditional laws make it an absolute labyrinth for foreign investors to actually get involved.
A total labyrinth. It's incredibly complex.
So today, our mission for you, the listener, is exploring how global investors are using digital innovations to, unlock a legally compliant side door.
I like that. A side door.
Yeah, side door to one of the most highly regulated property markets on the planet. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here. We are dissecting a pretty fascinating paradox today. We're talking about taking the oldest asset class in human history, right? Real estate, and merging it with the absolute frontier of financial technology. Because you have a nation that is actively seeking global participation, yet they're maintaining this rigorous, totally necessary control over their actual soil.
To guide us through this, we have a really detailed analysis piece. It's titled, "Can Expats Invest in Saudi Real Estate Through Tokenization?"
It's a great piece.
It is, but we aren't just looking at that in a vacuum, right? We are layering in major trend reports from the World Economic Forum, Deloitte, PwC, and Investopedia to really to understand the mechanics here.
Which is crucial because this isn't just a local story, it's a massive global shift.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because you simply cannot talk about Saudi Arabia right now without talking about Vision 2030.
Right, the master plan.
Exactly. This is the massive initiative driving their economic diversification away from just oil. I mean, we are talking about ground-up infrastructure projects on a scale that, honestly, the world has rarely seen.
The scale is definitely the crucial starting point. If you look at mega projects like NEOM,
Oh, wow, yeah.
which is this futuristic city basically being built from scratch in the desert, or Qiddiya, which is an entertainment and sports capital massive enough to host major global events.
It's just wild to think about.
It is. And the sovereign wealth fund there is injecting hundreds of billions of dollars into the domestic economy to manifest these physical realities.
So the economic engine is just roaring right now.
Completely. And the demand to participate in this growth from both institutional and individual global investors is understandably sky high. I mean, people see the cranes, they see the capital flowing, and they want a piece of the yield.
Yeah, of course they do. But I like to think of the Saudi real estate market right now as like this incredibly exclusive VIP club.
Okay, I can do that.
Right. Like the music is great. Everyone wants to get inside. The demand is just off the charts.
Yeah.
But the bouncers at the
The
door,
regulators?
yes, the regulatory requirements and the legal frameworks, those bouncers are exceptionally strict about who actually gets past the velvet rope.
They don't just let anyone in.
But no, they don't. For you sitting abroad, or even, an expat living in the region, the source material points out that direct individual property ownership is fraught with hurdles.
Significant hurdles.
Unless your investment is tied to a very specific business activity, or you have this highly specialized residency status, buying a commercial building or even a plot of land is largely off the table,
Right.
especially in locations that have like strategic or cultural significance.
And, from a macroeconomic perspective, those bouncers are performing a vital function.
How so?
Well, countries naturally want to protect their strategic lands. Real estate is finite. It is literally the bedrock of a nation's sovereignty.
Right, they can't just sell off the country.
Exactly. A government wants the influx of foreign capital to build and diversify the economy, sure. But handing over the actual legal deed, the title to the land itself, to foreign individuals en masse.
That sounds complicated.
It introduces immense complexities. We're talking control, national security, domestic housing affordability. The fundamental tension here is the desire for global capital versus the absolute necessity of sovereign control.
So, because direct ownership is restricted by that legal velvet rope, investors and technologists have basically had to rethink the very definition of what it means to own a piece of real estate.
Right. They have to get creative.
Very creative. So we have to look at how the text strictly defines tokenization, bringing in Investopedia's foundational definitions here.
Which is really helpful for setting the baseline.
Yeah. So tokenized real estate is the process of representing participation in a property-backed investment through digital units on a blockchain. And those units are linked directly to a real estate asset.
And the sources make a massive vital distinction here that we really need to highlight.
Which is?
Tokenization does not bypass Saudi property laws.
Oh, so you aren't hacking the legal system?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
You can't code your way around sovereign law. The underlying physical real estate must still comply with all local regulations.
What's fascinating here is, wait, let me actually let you explain the structure, because the PwC report goes into this.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is the brilliant legal and financial distinction between holding legal title and participating economically. This is where PwC's trend report on digital assets provides a lot of clarity.
Right.
The actual property, you know, the concrete and steel in Riyadh or Jeddah, is still purchased and held by a legally recognized, locally compliant entity.
Okay, so a local company.
Usually this is a special purpose vehicle, or an SPV.
An SPV, got it.
That local company passes the bouncer. Yeah. It has the right to be in the VIP club. It holds the deed, and it answers directly to the local municipalities.
So if I'm trying to wrap my head around this, it's like owning the rights to the box office profits of a blockbuster movie rather than actually owning the movie studio or the physical cameras they use to shoot it.
That is actually a great way to look at it.
Right. Like, you don't own the set. You can't walk onto the lot and tell the director what to do.
You have no operational control.
Exactly. But if the movie makes $1 billion, you get your percentage of that success.
That captures the dynamic perfectly.
Yeah.
You are holding a digital investment unit that represents a share of the investment structure connected to the underlying asset.
Okay, makes sense.
So if that commercial district appreciates in value, or say if that new residential community generates consistent rental income,
your digital tokens reflect that financial return.
Exactly. You are receiving the economic benefits of the property market without ever holding the legal title to the Saudi soil.
Wow.
It honors the local laws completely. The sovereign control remains intact, but the doors to global capital are open through economic participation.
But wait, if I own a token tied to a physical building, right, and the roof leaks or the air conditioning breaks down in the middle of a Saudi summer, who pays for it?
Yeah, that's the classic landlord problem.
Right. Do I get a digital bill sent to my laptop in London? Like, hey, please remit 10 crypto tokens for HVAC repair.
This raises an important question about operational reality. And the short answer is no, you do not get a bill.
Oh, thank goodness.
Right. The local entity, that SPV we mentioned earlier, is responsible for the physical property management. They hire the contractors, they fix the roof, they manage the tenants.
Okay, so they handle the headache.
Completely. What flows back to the token holders is the net yield. The operational costs are deducted from the gross revenue of the building before the profits are distributed digitally to the investors.
So you are insulated from the physical headaches of being a landlord.
Exactly. You get the exposure without the broken air conditioner.
Which is a fundamental shift in how we interact with assets. But we need to transition from the theory of tokenization to how it actually operates for you, the individual investor.
Right, the practical side.
Because the real magic here isn't just the legal workaround, it's the math. Deloitte's trend reports highlights something they call the liquidity premium, but the mechanism making that possible is fractionalization.
Fractionalization is key.
Let's talk about the pizza.
The pizza.
Yes, yeah. The pizza. Normally, if you want to invest in a major commercial high-rise, you have to buy the entire pizza.
I see where you're going.
You need tens of millions of dollars. You have to buy the whole building, or at least a massive stake in a traditional, highly illiquid real estate fund that, you know, locks your money up for 10 years.
Which shuts out almost everyone.
Right. But tokenization allows these massive real estate assets to be divided into incredibly small, affordable investment units.
Slices of the pie.
Exactly. It's like being able to buy a single pepperoni on a single slice of that massive pizza. It radically lowers the barrier to entry.
It democratizes access to an asset class that has historically been gated by extreme wealth and, quite frankly, institutional connections.
Yeah, you had to know a guy.
You really did. Deloitte points out that real estate is the largest asset class in the world, yet it is notoriously illiquid.
Super hard to buy and sell quickly.
Exactly. So by breaking a $50 million building into 50 million $1 tokens, you fundamentally change the nature of the asset. And it doesn't just lower the financial barrier. It eliminates a mountain of administrative friction.
The friction is usually a nightmare for global investors. I mean, the sources specifically detail the hurdles you'd face trying to do this the old-fashioned way.
It's staggering.
Mountains of legal documentation, the absolute necessity of finding and vetting local partnerships, navigating complex cross-border banking approvals.
It's exhausting just listing it all out.
It is. It can take months and cost a fortune just in legal fees before you even get close to closing a deal.
Right.
But centralized digital platforms, and the text specifically mentions the Ossil Gamma platform as an example here, they solve this. They allow users to review opportunities, evaluate the asset details, and track performance entirely online through a dashboard.
And by centralizing the discovery and investment process, platforms like Ossil Gamma represent a broader modernization of traditional real estate fundamentals.
It's dragging real estate into the 21st century.
It really is. The investor experience shifts from a paper-heavy, months-long ordeal to a streamlined digital interface. You can see the projected yields, the property location, the tenant history, all in one place.
Here's where it gets really interesting, and honestly where I have to push back a little on this whole concept.
Okay, let's hear it.
Does abstracting a physical building into a digital token on a screen make the investment feel, I don't know, too detached from reality?
Too detached.
Yeah. I mean, you are buying a fraction of a commercial district from a laptop. You aren't walking the halls. You aren't shaking hands with the property manager. It almost sounds like playing a city building video game, like SimCity or something.
No, right. I get that.
Do we lose something fundamental when we remove the tangible nature of real estate?
It's a valid concern. For sure.
Right.
But in the context of global finance, that detachment is the feature, not a bug.
The feature.
Yes. What you are calling detachment is what economists call the removal of friction, the traditional tangible nature of real estate. You know, flying to the country, touring the building, sitting in a notary's office with a translator to sign a stack of papers.
The old way.
The old way. That friction slows down capital. It limits who can participate and makes the market vastly less efficient.
I guess that's true.
You aren't losing the reality of the building. The building still exists. It still houses real businesses, and it still generates real rent. You are simply optimizing how the rights to that rent are distributed globally.
Okay, but look, anyone with a laptop can suddenly buy a microshare of a Riyadh skyscraper. Yeah. That sounds incredibly efficient, yes. But it also sounds like a massive playground for scammers.
Ah, the crypto Wild West fear.
Exactly. If we are talking about people's life savings or significant institutional capital, the Wild West is the last place you want to be. The blockchain might be secure, but the people launching the tokens might not be. Who is actually policing this?
The regulatory framework is the most critical pillar of this entire model. Without it, the ecosystem collapses.
So there are watchdogs.
Absolutely. Mm. In Saudi Arabia, the financial markets are overseen by the Capital Market Authority, or the CMA.
Okay, the CMA.
And the source material is unequivocal here. Regulators look at the economic reality of the token, not just the underlying blockchain technology.
So what does this all mean? Like, if these tokenized real estate investments function like securities, or if they act like collective investment schemes, they don't get to just float around in some unregulated digital ether.
No, definitely not. They fall strictly under the supervision of the CMA. If a token behaves like a security, meaning you are investing money with the expectation of profit derived from the efforts of others, like a property manager,
right,
it is regulated like a security. That triggers a cascade of compliance requirements that platforms must adhere to before a single token can even be minted or sold.
And the sources list these out, right? Hmm. Rigorous investor eligibility checks, strict disclosure obligations. So the platform has to provide incredibly clear documentation on how the assets are structured.
Exactly. And robust governance standards designed specifically for investor protection.
But I want to know how that actually works, because it sounds good on paper. But how do you enforce an eligibility check on a digital token that exists on a decentralized blockchain?
This is where the technology itself becomes the regulator.
Wait, really?
Yes. We are talking about smart contracts.
Mm-hmm.
self-executing code embedded directly in the blockchain.
Okay.
The platform doesn't just ask nicely for your ID. The smart contract governing the token is programmed to enforce the CMA's rules automatically.
Give me an example of that.
Sure. For example, the code can dictate that a token physically cannot be transferred to a digital wallet that has not passed a rigorous Know Your Customer, or KYC, and anti-money laundering background check.
So the regulation is literally baked into the code.
Exactly.
If my wallet isn't whitelisted by the platform after I've, you know, submitted my passport and cleared the background checks, the smart contract simply rejects the transaction. I couldn't buy the token even if I wanted to.
Precisely. The system won't let you. Furthermore, those smart contracts automate the compliance on the back end as well.
How so?
When it's time to distribute the quarterly rental yield, the smart contract calculates the exact fractional amount owed to each token holder and executes the payment simultaneously to thousands of whitelisted wallets.
All at once.
All at once, with a permanent, immutable record of the transaction. The technology doesn't circumvent the regulator. It gives the regulator an unprecedented level of transparency and enforcement capability.
So, wait, this feels like a paradox.
How do you mean?
Well, we just talked about how amazing it is that tokenization removes all this traditional friction and administrative nightmare, making everything fast and digital.
Yeah.
But then we introduced the CMA, KYC background checks, whitelisted wallets, and massive compliance obligations. Doesn't this heavy regulation just introduce a new kind of friction that slows down this supposedly fast, frictionless digital tech? Doesn't this basically kill the decentralized vibe of crypto?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you'll see why that regulatory friction is actually the catalyst for massive growth.
Really?
Yes. The World Economic Forum's trend reports constantly emphasize this exact point. Institutional adoption requires regulatory clarity. Serious money does not want decentralized anarchy.
Oh, that makes sense.
They want efficiency combined with legal recourse.
Institutional money, like pension funds and massive wealth managers.
Exactly. They cannot afford the risk of the Wild West. Yep. Without credible legal structures, transparent platforms, and a regulatory body like the CMA saying, "We are watching this, there are rules and disclosures are required," those massive pools of global capital simply will not participate.
So the regulation legitimizes the technology.
It signals to the global market that these digital investment models are operating within established, safe financial frameworks.
So the regulation isn't the bouncer keeping you out of the club. The regulation is the security guard inside the club, making sure the place doesn't burn down while you're enjoying the music.
That's a great analogy. Platforms must align these digital models with established financial regulations. That alignment is what allows a platform like Osul Gamma to securely connect investors from different regions to property markets.
It builds trust.
It builds essential trust. It provides a practical way to gain exposure while operating within a heavily monitored framework. The CMA is balancing a dual mandate, really.
Protecting investors and growing the economy.
Exactly. Protecting investors from fraud while simultaneously fostering financial innovation to support Vision 2030's broader economic goals.
This has been a deeply fascinating journey today. Let's synthesize this for you, listening right now. We started by looking at the massive physical boom of Saudi Arabia's Vision 2030. The cranes, the concrete, the new cities rising from the desert.
A physical transformation.
Yeah. And we navigated the strict legal barriers, that velvet rope that traditionally keeps foreign individuals from directly owning a piece of that boom due to perfectly valid macroeconomic and sovereign concerns.
And then we examined how tokenization separates legal title from economic exposure.
Right, the SPVs.
Right. By using special purpose vehicles to hold the physical deed, the model respects sovereign laws completely, while the digital tokens invite global participation in the economic upside.
We saw how fractionalization is taking a massive, highly illiquid asset class and slicing it up like a pizza. Platforms are splitting these $50 million buildings into affordable, heavily regulated digital units, totally removing the traditional cross-border friction of lawyers and flights.
And most importantly, we learned how smart contracts bake the CMA's rigorous compliance rules directly into the code, proving that regulation actually brings the institutional money to the table.
It's incredible. Whether you are actively looking to diversify your portfolio into the GCC, or if you simply want to understand the cutting edge of global finance, this matters to you.
It really does.
Because the very definition of property ownership is fundamentally changing.
Yeah.
It is shifting from an exclusive, highly localized, paper-based system to a fractional, globally accessible digital infrastructure secured by mathematics and oversight.
It's the future of real estate.
It really is a profound collision of concrete and code. And, you know, it leaves us with a pretty wild thought to mull over as we wrap up.
What's that?
Well, we've spent this entire time talking about how tokenization changes things for you, the investor. But think about the cities themselves. If a physical building in a major booming city can be fractionally funded and economically owned by thousands of everyday people scattered across the globe via digital tokens, how might that decentralized, borderless investment model eventually change the way our cities are actually built, funded, and connected to the rest of the world? If the world owns a piece of the skyline, does the skyline start to look different?
That is a fascinating question.
Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.